You're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another Fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/CC and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
Okay, you're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, a new service that I've started up. Today is Monday, June 8, 2015, and the first guest on this inaugural conference call is John Adams of BooksbustersCall.com fame, the John and Chris show. And welcome, John.
How's it going, Tim?
John, it's going fine. And as everyone may or may not have seen on fakeologist.com, I have been posting many of your latest calls because it seems that the Hoaxbusters call drive home commute is turning into quite the interview show, where you're getting all kinds of interesting guests. A lot of them have to do with my studies, psychology, study of deception, and those that rule over us. And the latest post that I just put up, that I just finished listening to, was your interview with an author who goes into the RAND Corporation, which is pretty interesting stuff. And I'm sure almost no one knows what the RAND Corporation is. And that's what I enjoy. It seems like you're taking all your reading, your past readings, and contesting authors and talking about it, which is great, because I don't think anyone reads really much anymore. And you seem to be reading and researching stuff that I like to find out about, but I would probably never read any of these books, so I enjoy that you're at least talking about them.
Yeah, luckily, it's pretty simple just to call people up and ask if they want to come on, and the majority of the time they just say yes. It really is that simple. I thought it would actually be a little bit more difficult, and, you know, there's been a couple of people who have said no and a couple of people who didn't respond back, but for the most part, everyone came on, and it's been fun.
Well, I think most authors of books that are trying to sell the books, even if they don't really like whatever broadcast they're going on or whatever host, they'll crowbar their topic and hint about any kind of talk show as long as they perceive it to have the money. And I actually just got contacted by an author of some conspiracy type book that I haven't heard of out of the blue, actually. And he wants to do an interview based on what he's heard of my show. And I don't even really know if he's in line with my thinking, but I might just do it for practice, because I do like practicing the art of active literacy. And I think you do a pretty good job yourself of extracting information out of these people. And again, even said that you don't have to agree with it, and I agree with you, but it's still interesting to hear about it. And it's also interesting something to push your even on these authors. I think they know everything.
Yeah, you definitely don't have to. I don't agree with, I guess I probably could say that most people don't agree with each other on most things anyways.
Yeah.
But as far as like the people that we get on, I mean, I definitely don't endorse them, whole cloth in any way, shape or form. Just take, for example, the last guy we had on, Alex Abella. You know, he's kind of a mainstream guy. He even told me he's, you know, like a liberal Democrat type. And, you know, said he had the opportunity to peruse the RAND Corporation documents. And I thought that was pretty interesting, and I probably wouldn't agree with him on his politics. So, you know, it's just,
I agree with that statement. I probably don't agree with your breakfast cereal choices either, but that doesn't mean you're not interesting.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think that's the great part of being an individual. It's great when we agree on a lot of things, but on the other hand, it's not always that interesting to the regular listenership. I think most people that make way in society realize that it's conflict that makes changes. Agreeing does almost nothing to blowing things up or knocking things over or clashing in some way is what generates waves of motion and energy.
Yeah, I agree, and I think just like you, I've actually made effort to actually try to get people on who disagree, but they just don't want to come on.
Yeah, I haven't really done that. I think I might start doing that just for fun because I've sort of run out of people that I agree with to talk to actively. So,
yeah.
There's always people that are willing to talk about 9/11, and I would like to hear your 9/11 views, of course. That is the focus of my website, psychologist.com, but it's not my only interest, and I have to admit, if people are wondering where the show's gone in the last couple weeks, you do, like anything else that you're not paid for, you do get tired of it sometimes and need to sort of withdraw and maybe do other things to remind yourself of why we're here and what you're doing. And I've always been a huge documentary fan. That's probably why I watch a lot of the 9/11 documentaries. So recently I've been just watching some of the heavily promoted documentaries on some of the feeds that I listen to. And I think documentaries are also making slight comeback lately because of the pervasiveness and the newfound distribution method called Netflix that most of the planet is now plugged into. So we'll see how long this keeps up. So there's been a lot of really undiscovered documentaries that would otherwise get no airtime anywhere that I've been bumping into lately. They aren't always 9/11, but they're still interesting to me. And I do post them, by the way. The ones that I'm interested in on my other website called morab.com, MOREAB.com, if anyone's listening. That site gets almost no hits. But on the other hand, it does have my other interests on there because I do have more than one dimension. I'm not just 9/11 all the time.
Tim, anyway, are you hearing your voice fade in and out?
No. Am I fading in and out?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I can't hear my own voice, so that could be for a million reasons. But for anyone realizing what we're doing a trial run here on this conference call, and it's a work, at least we know it's being recorded. So go ahead, John. You want to use it because your voice has not gone in and out since I've talked to you. But let's hear, if you could, your 9/11 journey, how you got into this whole interesting area, and I'll be quiet.
Well, I guess, it started, with a bandmate of mine sent me an email one day at my job and later at band practice, he asked me, he said, did you see that email I sent you about 9/11? And I said, no, I didn't look at it. And he said, oh yeah, you should check it out. And I'm all, well, what's it about? And he's all, well, it's about how, you know, and he kind of looked around a little bit. Kind of scared to say something. He's all, you know, it's about how the government did 9/11. And it was funny because it was almost instantaneous. I said, oh yeah, they did. It was like I'd never heard it spoken before. And the idea had kind of never even entered into my mind. And it was something I never, even bothered to look into.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I remember going back and watching the film. It was, I think it was 9/11 Road to Tyranny, Alex Jones. And, so from that point on, it was, you know, full speed ahead, but I have kind of a mosaic of weird, you know, things that had happened to me previously to where I'd come on to different types of information, but not really pieced it all together. You know, like I knew about the Kennedy assassination from a pretty early age, and even knew a little bit about Freemasons, but never tied any of that stuff into it. And it wasn't kind of until after that kind of started figuring things out, you know, hearing more things about the, you know, the New World Order and that type of stuff. So, yeah.
How long ago was that when you started looking into that, and when 9/11 happened, what did you think was going on?
Well, when 9/11 happened, I was living in Westwood, California, which is, I lived on a street called Hillgard, which is right across the street from UCLA. And I lived there with a roommate who was never really home because he was always traveling for business. And on 9/11, he was gone. So I woke up that morning. I walked out to my living room about 8:30 in the morning because I had a job where I didn't start till 10 o'clock. And I had about 18 messages on my machine, if I remember correctly. And it was all from family members and friends. And they were saying, hey, turn on your TV. I didn't have a television that was hooked up to reception. I just had it where it was hooked up to a VCR. So I had to pull the TV out and put my hand in the back there and kind of hold the place where the antenna is just to be able to get reception and see what was going on. And I saw, you know, the Twin Towers smoking and the replay of the plane hitting the tower. And so I was like, wow, that's pretty wild. And so I ended up talking to a friend of mine, and he said, who lived a couple of, about 10, 15 miles away in Malibu. And he said, yeah, why don't you come down to my house if you're not going to work? So I didn't have to go into work. And it was very eerie because, when I got outside, there was no buses running. There were no people around. And once I even got out onto Wilshire Boulevard, there were no cars. I got on the 405 freeway. And the whole way from Westwood all the way down to Malibu, which is all the way down PCH, I saw about two cars. And in that time period, I became slightly paranoid because I was thinking to myself that the cops might pull me over for being the only car out on the road. Like, you know, what are you doing driving right now? But I wasn't really scared or afraid that there was going to be a terrorist attack on Los Angeles or anything like that. So, I still had my wits about me, and yeah, just went over there and watched the news all day long until late at night. And that was about it.
Were you conspiratorially minded at that time, or was this all being taken in as just an average citizen that you were?
No, I was not. I came to the conclusion that it was blowback. And blowback, for anybody who doesn't know, is, you know, that because America has done so much bad stuff all over the world that, you know, there's going to be these terrorists that are going to come and hit us at home for all the bad stuff that we did. And I kind of bought into that. To where I was like, well, yeah, we have, you know, done some bad things all over the world, and it is, I'm sure this is some retaliation for something. But I definitely didn't think that it was justified, and so when it came time to go on to Afghanistan, I definitely bought into the idea of going to go find Mr. Bin Laden. And so, yeah, I was all on board. I remember arguing with liberal friends about it, and some of the things that they started to, that they were just saying on a level one based reality started to make a little bit of sense. And once we were into Afghanistan, I started to kind of question stuff when it was getting time to go into Iraq, because I was like, well, what does Iraq have to do with anything? You know, it didn't really make sense. I'm all, well, is Al-Qaeda in Iraq? I don't think those two line up with each other. And then all of a sudden Saddam was the bad guy. And then an epiphany happened when I was watching Donald Rumsfeld being interviewed on the Jim Lehrer NewsHour on PBS. And Jim Lehrer's kind of given him a little bit of staged grilling, I'm sure. but it was a grilling nonetheless. And he was saying, well, you know, what about all the weapons of mass destruction that were supposed to be there? And there weren't any weapons of mass destruction. And you guys all said that there were going to be. And Rumsfeld stops him. He says, well, wait a minute. We never said there was going to be weapons of mass destruction. And I remember kind of like going, wait a minute. They never said there was weapons of mass destruction? I was like, yeah, they did. And so I was with my mom at her house watching this, and I started questioning this vocally. And, I, you know, my mom's a real dyed-in-the-wool conservative, so she didn't actually compute as to why I was questioning, because it's like, oh, this goes against all my conservative programming. And so I started to question things a lot more at that point, and although still remaining in a conservative type mindset, which I wasn't a hardcore conservative. I was probably more of a, what you would call a paleo conservative, but which isn't, you know, full blown neoconservative. So,
yeah, I've always considered myself a social conservative, fiscal conservative, whatever that means. I have a problem. I don't even remember what neoconservative means most of the time. I need people to redefine it, because I don't even think most people just talk about it, know what it means. Neo means near, does it not? Near?
Yeah. Neo means new.
Oh, new, okay.
Yeah, neo means new. It's the neoconservatives come from a faction of old hard left communists, actually, in the 1940s and 50s, who followed the works of Leon Trotsky. And when Trotsky got expelled by Stalin, they were kind of left out there hanging. So what they decided to do, and this is actually pretty well documented, they actually decided that what they should do is they should take over the Republican Party and just start calling themselves conservatives and Republicans, but kind of keep the same old hardline Trotsky communist ideas, but just kind of cloak them and gradually insert them into the Republican Party. And that's where you get the term neoconservative from, because that's what they were calling themselves.
Okay, I never heard about that. So what, just to educate myself, what policies would be inserted in the Republican Party that weren't there before? What would those be?
For the most part, Republicans were anti-war. The Republican Party was the party that was opposed to war back during World War II. And so if you look at people like Senator Robert Taft, who was, I think he's the son of William Taft, and he was a Skull and Bones member, but he was kind of the he was the Ron Paul of his day, apparently.
Okay.
And that's kind of what the old Republican right would be, something akin to, like, you would see Ron Paul professing to be or pretending to be. So, yeah, they were anti-war. They were anti-spending. They were anti – that's why they're called conservatives, because they were conservative fiscally.
Yeah.
And so they have totally gone south of what they originally professed to be. Because of the neoconservative infiltration, which I think that was totally planned. I don't think that was something like, oh, we secretly infiltrated and took it over. So,
well, all organizations are right for takeover anyway. All companies are. As soon as the leadership goes a little weak, they're always vulnerable. They're just shells that anyone can insert themselves into, like the virus that the people leave up on Earth for. They just take over and exist.
Yeah.
Entity, if they are strong enough.
Yeah, I agree. And the interesting part about anybody who follows Trotsky is you got to remember what Trotsky was. It's well known Trotsky was a Freemason, and he was he agreed with the idea of perpetual revolution. And that's what was kind of the mantra. That's kind of why, allegedly, why he got booted out of the Stalin regime, because he was like, no, we need to have revolution after revolution after revolution. That's the only way a true revolution happens, is to keep having more and more revolutions. And Stalin was like, no, I'm going to be the dictator for a while. I don't want any revolutionaries over here, so.
He didn't want any more change. He let the roulette wheel stop on that number and keep on spinning it.
That's right.
Interesting. When did you start? You got some Alex Jones 9/11 movies, and that's when you started doubting at least the official story. And what different rabbit hole for 9/11 did you go down to come to where you are today?
Wait, what did you say?
Am I not coming through well? I wanted to know what 9/11 holes that you went down and
rabbit hole.
Where you are today. Yeah.
I was pretty just mainline 9/11 conspiracy theory stuff. I didn't go down any too crazy rat holes, because when you listen to Alex Jones, he kind of keeps you in that box of, you know, there's planes are real, buildings collapse are real, and anybody who says that there's no planes is a total kook. Don't listen to them. Don't even touch that stuff ever. And so that's the way it was for me for a long time. And eventually I just stopped even looking into 9/11. I didn't even look into any of it ever. And I can't remember exactly, now that I think about it, I do remember it was because of Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing and things of that nature that I started kind of looking outside the box, because even in the controlled paradigm of Alex Jones and the rest of the conspiracy theory world, they weren't even touching on the very obvious fakeness of those two events. And so I was getting frustrated because I wasn't finding any outlets that I agreed with. I would find some stuff like I've told you before that another website where they go the extra mile to convince everybody that Zionist Jews are doing everything, and everything is fake, with crisis actors who play the same part in, you know, multiple events, but also moonlight as, you know, aides to Hillary Clinton and ridiculous things like that. And so that was kind of turning me off at first, but then my wife's cousin got me an iPod in 2012, and I just typed into the search bar Sandy Hook hoax, and the first thing that came up was Hoax Busters. And so I listened to a call with Chris, and I was really interested in what they had to, what him and I think who was on the call then, Robert and Marcus and somebody else. And then, you know, I went back and listened to older calls where you were on it, and a lot of other people that I can't remember their names offhand. But yeah, like the long conversation where facts and stuff in the news was gone over with kind of a meticulous comb. And at first, a lot of stuff that they were talking about 9/11, I didn't totally agree with, because I wasn't even exposed to the information.
Mm-hmm.
And then as I listened to Chris on some of his solo calls kind of flesh out the details more, I was like, okay, this is kind of making sense, you know, a lot of this stuff. And then I even went and watched September Clues. I remember, because I didn't have a computer for a long time, and I remember pulling over to a Starbucks on my lunch break, or maybe it was a Coffee Bean. I guess those details don't matter, but it was a Coffee Bean, and I pulled over and I used the iPod with the Wi-Fi there to watch September Clues. And I only watched about 15 minutes of it because the Wi-Fi kept going in and out. And I only had a 30-minute lunch break then. And that's really, even to this day, I've only watched 15 minutes of September Clues, but I guess that's all I really needed to watch to kind of get, I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah. Obviously, the planes are fake flying into the buildings, and there's a whole bunch of digitized people running around and things of that nature. So, you know, and then since then, going on to a fakeologist and seeing stuff about, you know, Vic Sims and, you know, compilation victims and things like that. And it's really stuff that it's beyond coincidence. It's like there's no way that, you know, all those people when Chris called the Social Security Index, I mean, that's just not going to happen with anything else.
Yeah, there's too many people missing from the Social Security Death Index.
Yeah.
To make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, so I just kind of factored all that stuff in together, and then plus the fact is, okay, no planes hit the building because it's all fake footage. So those people who allegedly died in the floors where the plane allegedly hit the building, I guess they didn't die because no plane hit the building. So then you would have to go the other route would be, well, then they blew it up and all the people who were in there and they, you know, blew up the building or, you know, and then you would just say, well, it makes more sense. And all of these events, and like I said, like I've said before, I wasn't there that day, so I don't actually know for a fact to a T that nobody died, but I suspect I'm 99.9% sure of my suspicion that people didn't die because they didn't. Nobody died at Boston bombing. Nobody died at Sandy Hook. And all of these other events appear to have no deaths and a bunch of people running around with fake blood and fake limbs falling off and all sorts of other ridiculous nonsense. And then, you know, something like Sandy Hook where, I mean, there's not even Sandy Hook or you know, Aurora shooting. There's no proof that the, you know, James Holmes or who was the other guy, Adam Lanza, were even there.
Yeah.
There's no proof that those guys even, there's no proof that Adam Lanza even exists.
Right.
There's no proof
There's lots of proof that there's monkey business, that there's something wrong with the story, with the images. I think that's a statement I can believe in that. I can be very confident in saying there's not a lot of proof, you're right, that he exists. There's more proof that he's fabricated in my mind.
Yeah, when it comes to him in particular, I've seen no proof that he was an actual real person.
Right.
As far as James Holmes is concerned, I remember seeing a picture of James Holmes, and then the guy in the courtroom is a different dude.
Yeah.
The first picture that they ran of James Holmes, he looks like a different person altogether. So I don't know what that means, but the guy who's in the courtroom with the Joker hair is not the same dude that they originally ran the picture of.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I started getting suspicious of this stuff, and Jones was not covering it, and other people were not even going to broach the subject of any of these things being fake. And so it was nice to hear on Hoaxbusters and fakeologists alike that it was, you know, that it was, even if I don't have to come to the, I don't have to come to the same conclusions. I don't have to even think the same events that Chris or you or anybody else thinks are fake, but it's nice to at least broach the subject and have an outlet to do that, you know?
Well, it's nice to be able to flesh out these ideas because they're very marginal, even if we already marginalized truth community, if you want to call it that.
Yes, very.
And at least we won't laugh at you or condemn you or otherwise marginalize you for coming up, because we don't have the, I don't think anyone has the exact right way of looking at it, but we can at least toss the ideas around and kick them around amongst each other and at least ponder them together without having to wonder if we're crazy for saying so.
Yeah, that's another good thing, too, is because You know, like if you listen to some of the early calls with me and Chris, I am questioning whether people died at these events or not. I'm not, you know, and I don't think on board is the proper terminology. It's just something that I was, after a time period, I was like, well, yeah, it just makes more sense to have a controlled environment because that way nothing can happen. You know, if you're pulling off one of these. If you're pulling off one of these alleged shootings, nobody with a concealed carry can come and shoot the gunman and make sure that he didn't actually do the job. Plus, you know, like you and I have talked about before, the occult numbers that magically always get hit. You know, the Virginia Tech shooting had 33 people die, including the gunman. So it's like, well, what did they do? Go around shooting everybody to make sure they got 33 people? I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Outnumbered.
33 is being round numbered.
Yeah. So it just made more sense after a while. I was like, oh yeah, they faked it, and they faked the numbers, and they fake the deaths, and then they have the people who are doing the interviews are. Here's an interesting one that I've never brought up before, but just in light of recent podcasts I've been listening to, you know, the 7/7 bombing in London. Now, one of the most famous conspiracy theory clips of all time, I would say, is Peter Power going on BBC. And talking about how there was a drill going on at the exact same time for the exact same thing, right?
Yeah.
So it would make more sense that you wouldn't even need to have a quote-unquote drill go live. Instead, what you do is you have a drill. You have video cameras filming the drill, filming everybody's reaction to this, you know, fake explosion, even though there may have been a real explosion, but I don't think anybody died in the explosion. And what you would have is the reactions from all the people involved in the drill. And then later on, those people who were involved in the drill, they would just get told by the news, oh, it turns out that drill went live and there was real terrorists there doing the exact same thing. And then they all, like, they're not going to question that. Even if they were involved in the drill, unbeknownst to them. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. The 7/7 one, I think, was just another test to see how far they could push their ridiculous storyline. To say that there was an exact drill for the exact same thing and it accidentally or suddenly went live is so ridiculous, so impossible. The coincidence factor... so off the charts crazy.
Yeah.
That it would be impossible. It's literally like lightning striking twice. Because how many times do they ever have these kind of drills and make a big deal out of them in London? I've never even heard of drilling before ever. To any extent. That's a very. So yeah, and the fact that people bought it. Again, it was another test, and people seemed to buy that really unreasonable excuse. So, yeah, it was, to me, it would just bolster their confidence that I would say in the majority, people are just not actually paying attention. They're just not paying attention at all. They have no interest in this stuff, and it's only another marginalized group that follows the media, which is shrinking by the day, traditional media, that would be following in the first place and be... would accept it. So we're talking about fractions of society that are following this and fractions of society that don't believe it. And when it comes down to it, this is a numbers game. And if the numbers are so insignificant that people that question all these events, then they can literally just go ahead with whatever agenda falls after or because of these events.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, so... even with something like 7/7, you immediately have the alternative media, the so-called alternative media there to guide
you. To back it up.
To back it up. Oh, it was real. But the government, you know, did, you know, it was a real terrorist attack, but the government did it on top of another drill. And I definitely used to buy into that. There is a very, you know, Alex Jones's movie Terror Storm covers the 7/7 bombing. Then there's a good old Tom Secker's 7/7 Deception.
And, yep. Okay.
And they, you know, that's what it is. It's, you know, people really did die in that bombing, but it was a drill going on to distract from the fact that there was a real bombing and, you know, people really died. There's no, mm-hmm. And the other thing is, you know, these people, will just accept whatever the news says. So if the news says, you know, and then, you know, we'll get criticized for this as being, you know, crazy or stupid, because, you know, we believe that these things are fake, when most these other alternative media types and researchers, they don't have the facts themselves. They just go off of whatever the news says and reports it and report on it as being real because the news put it out. So, you know, they didn't go down and contact any of the witnesses themselves or anything like that, but they've got all the news footage in their documentaries, and that's backing up what they're saying. So.
Right. The original source is what we're always questioning, or what I'm always questioning. The media. The official story, as told by the official media, it starts off rotten, so it doesn't matter what conclusions you draw. If you draw conclusion A or conclusion B or C, it's all based on the same false information that is literally fed to everyone as real. And then you realize, okay, now we can't trust the media, so who is the media? And then you get deep into some of the discussions that you like to look into as well, and we find the intelligence communities. We find the CIA that really isn't into James Bond. It's really into culture creation. We find the FBI, which may not be so much into enforcing interstate laws. Maybe they're into other more non-known events and non-known and more unknown to the public anyway. Culture creation or idea creation, all these entities where you're sold a way of looking at them is not actually what they are doing all the time. And that's where people get thrown off, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the James Bond ideas and all that stuff. I mean, it has to be the movies themselves will give you the false narrative to believe that all that stuff's going on. And I mean, obviously I think something like the FBI, I've actually met, you know, now that I think about it, this is kind of funny. I actually went to a gym once and met a guy from the FBI. Mm-hmm. So, I think agents in localized areas, they're more, doing things like, you know, busting people for taking too much cash out of the bank, or, you know, like kind of things associated with
banking,
you know,
the banking police.
Exactly. That's exactly what they are. The banking police. Hey, you're a drug dealer, but you're not in our crew. So we're going to, you know, come bust you,
put
you out of business or take you into the fold. And, and so those type of things where people are doing quote unquote illegal activities because they haven't been sanctioned yet. So that's a lot of those type of crimes. And then the CIA is, you know, from what I can gather, is mostly just involved in, like you said, culture creation and psychological manipulation. And it was interesting too, because when I was talking to the Alex Abeya guy the other day about the RAND Corporation, and you read about all the psychological the RAND Corporation is involved with the psych warfare techniques being used on the public, and how they're completely and totally switched over from, you know, being this kind of military strategy think tank into a sociology think tank.
Yeah.
And then it goes back to, you know, what you were saying about how what we like to look into. You come to the conclusion that something like the Cold War was completely fake, and that there was no threat on either side. They weren't going to blow each other up. And, you know, I mentioned this on calls with Chris before. You know, you could go back and look this up. You know, Nikita Khrushchev came over here to Hollywood. Okay, he visited Hollywood. Dwight D. Eisenhower came out to Hollywood. He gave a big old speech. Frank Sinatra, Marilyn Monroe, the biggest movie stars of the day, were all in the audience waiting to shake hands with Khrushchev. Out of all the places that he wanted to go in America, the first place he goes is Hollywood.
Yeah.
People that make his reality, that make it possible.
Yeah, and on top of that, if this guy was this crazed, you know, communist that we needed to be afraid of, I mean, he came over here in the 50s, and then the Cold War extended on into the 1980s. Why didn't we arrest him immediately? And, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it was a big
contradictions that are right out in plain sight. Nobody. Form of cognitive dissonance not to question them. Because you see one thing, you're told another, it makes no sense, you can't reconcile it in your brain. All that does is cause confusion and make you want to withdraw from trying to understand it, because no one is saying the unspeakable, that they're working together. That's the only thing that makes everything make sense.
That's right.
They're working together. Isn't that amazing that the governments of all countries, they get up there and then they realize they're in a totally different stratosphere and a different club, and the real enemy are the people of each individual country.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying you, I'm saying to the people listening, do you really think that Putin and Obama dislike each other?
Do you really think that Putin can't speak English, so we can't just talk to him directly when he went to school in London, for God's sake? Can't we just talk? Can't we just shoot the breezes and say, hey, Putin, what's happening, guy? Why do you have to speak Russian all the time and pretend you don't know what's going on and that you're the arch enemy? Let's just talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Drop your acting role, because we know you can speak English. Let's go. Let's talk. Same with all the other arch villains out there. We know that the actor who plays the leader of North Korea, he was trained in Switzerland.
Yep.
I don't think they teach in Jesuit school North Korean. I think it's English probably.
I would tend to agree, and I would think that he probably communicated with Dennis Rodman very well.
They probably did hang out and probably did talk about whatever, not. I probably speak better English than Dennis Rodman, because I can't understand him either.
That's funny.
Anyway, I think your time is up now based on your...
Yep,
you told me.
Yeah, I got like 3 minutes here. But yeah, the leaders of the free world, they're selling us on the same old stuff once again. And when it came to 9/11... You know, 9/11 was, like Alan Watt says, unfortunately, Alan Watt has been boring me for quite a while now, and I haven't gave him a listen in a long time, but what he used to say was, this was a must-be scenario, and it was going to happen one way or the other, by hook or by crook. And so when they did this, it had to be big. It had to, and the cool thing about it, and I say cool in quotation marks, is it didn't even have to really happen, because they had, from what I've been looking at, is it looks like they've been doing this for quite a while on lower levels of bakery, And so they got confident enough, okay, we can pull this off. We can pull, you know, we can pull this off big time. And we don't even really need to do anything at all. We just need a controlled situation. And there's all sorts of areas of speculation as to the means of making that happen and all that type of stuff. And I'm totally open to all that, but that's probably something for a completely different conversation.
Okay. Well, let's leave it at that. We'll pick this up. We'll make this a bit of a series. I might glue this to another one if you want, and then we can keep on going as we have available time.
Sounds good.
As is, we'll think about it, and maybe we'll be convening if you want tomorrow at your allotted time, and pick up the conversation.
Yeah, if you want to do it tomorrow at 1:30 again, that's cool.
All right, great. I want to make sure this recorded as well.
I'm on a vacation. Chris let me on a vacation from Hoax Busters. So.
Yeah, I know you got some spare time. Chris is off for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Time, and we'll keep your mind active and maybe pick your brain some more, because your research is really interesting. Your interviews are really interesting. And
cool. So are yours.
Well, we try. I think we're researching similar stuff, so I enjoy it. And I think both of us are, even though I haven't met you and you haven't met me, probably fairly real people. We both have really tight schedules, time constraints, and we just squeeze these things in our spare time. So
That's exactly it. Yeah, it's funny too because I actually am like looking into specific subjects that I don't think other people are looking into,
mm-hmm.
but because it's literally spare time work, it'll take me 6 months to even be able to get it out.
Yeah, life does tend to get in the way of this research, but it is important to keep living, doing regular people stuff and not think all this stuff, because it's fairly antisocial behavior.
It is.
Like it or not.
It is.
It's not something you can talk about with most people.
No. Nope. You gotta put on the mask. At least I do. I gotta put on the mask when I go to work, or else, you know, people already think I'm some sort of weird health nut at work because when they offer to go buy me lunch at McDonald's or something, I say no. So.
Yeah, you'll just eat this really odd thing called a banana or an orange, stuff that hasn't been processed through General Mills or Kraft Foods. What a concept. Eating fairly natural food, it doesn't even cost as much.
So,
yeah, no. It's not easy, but. All right, well, thanks for the conversation, and pick it up next time.
Okay, man.
All right.
Have a good night.
Okay.
Hello, I'm Del Qua, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.